Welcome, welcome, welcome to Nodes in the Net, a weekly tangential irreverent conversation that caters to the interests of liminal trickster mystics like you. And like today's guest, Christine Wolfer, who is my sister. And I can honestly say that I did not have any idea how woo my sister is and how much the label of liminal trickster mystic might apply to someone in my very own family, which goes to show you folks, like, get a podcast and people will start telling you their stories that are shockingly more aligned with your interests than you ever could have believed. I love having a podcast, and I love having Christine for a sister. This episode is, it really is an interesting thing, the blurring of the lines between my, physical meat space reality and the internet reality around which the podcast is typically based. So my sister is a registered nurse, and in this episode, we talk about, you could say the midlife crisis that resulted from what can only be called PTSD that she found herself saddled with as a result of being an ICU nurse during a global pandemic. Going much deeper into the story than we ever have at, like, family Christmas or whatever, Christine told me about the transcendent alchemical experience that she had camping alone in Death Valley. And I think that you're really going to love it. And, you know, there's some mention of psychic phenomena and all sorts of interesting things in this episode. I really hope you enjoy this, and we're going to get right to it. But before we do, how about a little reading from the Creek Mason Substack? This piece is about my own midlife crisis. This is a two-parter, and I'm going to be writing the second half this week. So if you head to creekmasons.substack.com and hit subscribe, you will get an email notification when the second part comes out. And you can read the rest of what I'm going to be reading aloud for you today. So here it is, and then we'll get into this wonderful, illuminating, mind-blowing conversation with my sister, Christine. It's called Midlife Mid-Polycrisis. Given the state of the world, I'm choosing to demand to be allowed a midlife crisis in every birthday text I receive today. It's my 35th. Of course, the objections of many of my well-wishers are predictable. Midlife? It's too soon. To be honest, though, I think 70 is stretching it. The average life expectancy in the United States has already begun to decline, and there's plenty of sensational reasons it might get worse. Surely the white supremacist race war, the sequel to the Civil War, or the already in progress World War will kill me before I get to 70. If not, surely insane and unprecedented climate disasters, like a tornado here in Silicon Valley, where I've always believed they were impossible, will finish me off. Maybe it'll be another plague, this one antibiotic-resistant, bred in the crucible of our factory farm system. Could be that techno-fascists decide one day that I've said too many troubling things online over the years. Capitalism could collapse. AI could rise up. MIT robots could be upgraded to out-of-control murder bots. Godlike transhumans could go on a supervillain rampage to destroy the species from which their new branch shot off. It happened to the Neanderthals. You ever think about that? They coexisted with Homo sapiens, albeit briefly. Or my crisis could be personal. Maybe I won't get the alcoholism under control, and the strain on my liver when amplified by my psych meds will be too much. Maybe long COVID will give me heart disease. A dozen years of a pack-a-day smoking, though now behind me, could result in lung cancer. I could be done in by my love of steak. Or perhaps my crisis could be something incredibly unexpected. Our electromagnetic soul energy could be hunted down, farmed and harvested, or otherwise consumed by extraterrestrial plasma beings. More on that later. And to get more on that, you're going to have to go to creekmasons.substack.com. And I really hope you do. So enough of introduction. Let's get into this episode with Christine Wolfer, my very own sister.
Hello, Jeff.
My sister, I promised I was going to yell at you. That's like the initiatory aspect of being on the podcast. You have to get like screamed at right from the get-go.
That's awesome. I find it very friendly and pump me up.
Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for becoming a node in the net. You're talking from your van right now. And like, you know, I'm sort of, it looks like we're having internet problems.
Of course we are. As soon as we hit record.
Of course we are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is what tends to happen. Let me I'm going to go into low data mode, which means you won't be able to see me, unfortunately, which is, you know, a huge shame for everyone because they always want to be looking at me at all times. But the camera will still be recording unless you turn it off. And I don't do much with the recordings, and this is all being recorded right now. I don't know. I might end up cutting this out later or not. We'll see. I don't tend to do a ton of editing, but like, the recordings, like of a friend of mine who's in the Creek Masons sometimes does editing with the videos and, puts them up sort of anonymized on TikTok and, you know, Instagram threads and things like that. So if you have a cool quote, your floating head might, you know, like masked head might show up on TikTok. But I'm going to go into low data mode just to preserve our bandwidth.
Okay.
And then the next thing I'm going to do, sorry for, you know, the technical difficulties. The next thing I'm going to do is pull a tarot card.
Woo!
So Christine, you know, thank you. Thank you for joining me from your van.
Yay, man.
Yeah. Can you, like, just to ground us in, like, physical, you know, space, like, what's the deal with the van?
The van. So in 2020, there was this pandemic, and I am a ICU nurse, and I needed a place to be outside of my family. But I also love being outdoors. And so I took a van, I bought a van, and converted it into a camper. And at first, she was a pandemic van, and now she is a adventure van. So that's where I'm at right now. I'm sitting in the passenger seat. It has a swivel chair, so I'm facing the house side of the van, not the cab side of the van. So
So I mean, like, I see projects like this on TikTok all the time where people, I think you called it like a schoolie, like one of your friends did that.
Oh yeah, he converted a school bus into a camper, schoolie, yeah.
Yeah, and like I've had friends over the years, you know, we live in Silicon Valley, so you hear about people who get like enormous payouts from Google on their first job or whatever, and then they like retire at 28 and live the rest of their lives in a van down by the river. is that kind of the goal, the aim?
You know what? This van, I didn't have an aim other than to take it out on adventures to go to different places around the country. So like national parks and whatnot. And then just to use it to isolate myself, during the pandemic or quarantine myself, isolate, I guess, because I didn't always have COVID, just twice.
Yeah. How many times have you had COVID at this point?
Two times.
Just two. That's not bad. Presumably you have a good knowledge of how to use PPE if you survived an entire pandemic with only two infections.
Yeah. Yeah. And it actually was not at work. Well, from work, it was from coworkers, and it wasn't until it's not as a part of my job did I get COVID. Very, very, very lucky and blessed to have worked at a hospital that had adequate PPE and protection, because not everybody did. And so I actually felt safer from COVID with COVID patients at work than I did outside. Because you know who has COVID in the hospital. We knew. Outside right, the hospital, you don't know. And so the first time I got COVID, it was from a coworker who didn't know that they had COVID. And it was 17 of us that got COVID all at the same time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah, yeah. It was in 2021, at the end of 2021. So
yeah.
When we all were like, hey, let's go out to dinner.
Right. The part of the pandemic where everybody was saying the pandemic isn't over because you're over it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. But we don't see as many people now as we did back then. And so, it's different now. So, but definitely the van started out as a result of the pandemic, and I bought it before everybody started going nuts buying vans. And so I was very lucky. The place that I bought it from actually asked me to sell it back to them after I'd already cut a bunch of holes in it to put in like fans and windows and stuff for almost twice the amount that I paid for it, because there was this whole run on vans, and it's very popular now. That you see on TikTok, YouTube, all the people converting vans. Yeah. So, and honestly, that's where I got the idea for it. But I jumped in early, so it worked out for me, and it's still working out for me. Here I am in the van. I love it. I love my van.
Yeah. You're living the dream. It's, there's a reason that there's a run on, vans, I imagine, like the freedom, the liberty that it creates, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, to hop in and go someplace cool, like I went to Northern Arizona, Southern Utah, spent over a week there, to be able to open up my back doors and there's, the Grand Canyon, or there's all this amazing, beautiful places, nature. I mean, that there's nothing that compares to that. Or the Milky Way, going to a park that has the dark night sky. You can see the Milky Way, which reminds me of being a child laying out in the Santa Cruz Mountains looking at the Milky Way, because there just wasn't that much light pollution from the Bay Area at that time. So I remember seeing the Milky Way as a kid, and now as a result of being able to take the van wherever I want to, I can go see the Milky Way and the dark night sky and see all the shooting stars, and there's nothing like it. Or take it to the ocean and open up the back doors and have the ocean breeze right there coming through the van. So
Yeah. Wow. So much about our current society, I think, is kind of whack in our, the way that we've divorced ourselves from nature and separated ourselves from those, forest bathing experiences and the true darkness, I think, is something that's needed for the psyche, I think I'm reading a book right now, by Deborah Eden Tull called Luminous Darkness. About her pitch for it, I guess, is kind of we've had too many white men say that everybody needs to get enlightened, and the better route for everyone would be to get endarkened. And like she lists endarkenment as being like a reconnection to like earth and femininity and, you know, like a kind of like backing away from all of the, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, like as someone who's like in a science profession, you know, as a nurse, right? Yeah. The idea that like, maybe we went a little overboard with like weighing and measuring and, you know, devoting our lives to metrics and the growth mindset thing and all this. And maybe there's something to be said about like, instead of over indexing on rational, you know, logical, analytical ability, maybe there's something to be said for tapping into intuition and yeah, and like listening to that like receptive, you know, that like endless, fertile possibility that exists in the dark. You know what I mean? And before you answer, that since I'm talking about intuition, or respond, I don't know if there was even a question there, but like, since I'm talking about intuition, I did also draw a tarot card a little bit earlier, and we got like kind of a scary one. We got the Nine of Wands, or sorry, the Nine of Swords, which is a person who's like sitting up in bed, their head is in their hands. They're like, they got a blanket over half their body, and it's like a dark, interestingly, it's a dark background with these, you know, nine swords on the wall behind them, sort of like extending off the right hand side of the card, which, you know, in tarot kind of tends to represent the future. So I think that, like, traditionally, this is a card of, it indicates like, I don't know, maybe worrying about the future, anxious rumination, fear. It can be, it's kind of a spooky card. It looks like someone who's depressed. Maybe they just woke up from a nightmare. You know, secrets, worries, inner turmoil. So these are all the things that that this card represents. And I like to bring that up like right after I've just gone on a rant, because then it gives us an opportunity to either like follow the original path, or like, I don't know, what does the card bring up for you? That could be an interesting route as well.
So we're going to do both because yeah, I just got called out by a tarot card. okay. The reason that I love the van so much is because of all of the turmoil. One of the things recently got an Apple Watch, yay technology. What my Apple Watch has taught me is that I am a extremely stressed out, anxious person. When I fall asleep, sometimes my heart rate, instead of going down, goes up. And, it does sleep tracking and whatnot. And so, one of the things that I'm noticing is if I wake up out of REM, so first of all, I very, very rarely remember any of my dreams, but I've been trying to make more of an effort. And when I wake up out of REM, that's when you become aware of dreaming, right? I notice that it is almost always nightmares. I'm waking up out of nightmares. I'm not waking up out of like happy, fun, flying around the world dreams. I'm waking up out of worry and like stress and all of that. And so recently I quit my job 8 months ago and decided, you know what, I need to get out of the mode where I am stressed out, taking care of other people, not taking care of myself, being, getting like all up in my head, worried and stressed out, right? Getting into the moment, into my body, into the earth, really. And so I think that both things that you brought up, this book, the endarkening, is that what it was?
Well, the book is called Luminous Darkness, but yeah, she wants us to all have a, instead of an enlightenment, an endarkment.
An endarkment. I love it. I love it a lot, actually. But I think that there is wisdom to that, that is not of your brain, but of your body and your, I think from your body, which includes your brain too, but sometimes we just spend way too much time way up here in our heads and not enough time in our bodies. Right. And so I think that, I'm struggling to kind of put it together in a way that makes sense, because some of it just doesn't even have words, right?
Yeah.
Right? I think that there's a lot of wisdom to it. And putting myself first was driven out of a sense of having this diagnosis. So I broke my arm. I did some nerve damage to that arm. And I had a diagnosis of complex regional pain syndrome, which is an intensely painful nervous system breakdown, basically. Your nervous system gets stuck in fight or flight. And it's not like fight or flight, like global fight or flight, like your entire body is in fight or flight. It's that nerve thinks that acts as if you're under attack. And it is, it's really odd, because on that arm, it would sweat all the time when it wasn't hot, like compared to my other arm, or I would have intensely painful, like fire burning down my arm type of nerve pain. And so my doctor, I'm lucky to have a specialist as a result of my job who studies this. And she basically said, women who are middle-aged, who injure their upper body, who are high achieving and tend to be warriors or have trauma in their background, those are the people who get this. And I'm like, well, okay, so me. You just described me. Yeah. And so she said, the way to get out of it is not through medicine. It's not through physical therapy as much through the mind-body connection.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so that was one of the things that made me think, I'm going to quit my job. And my job is going to be that mind-body connection. I'm going to get back to myself. So what did I do? I loaded up the van. I went to the desert. I went to Death Valley. And I spent a few days out in Death Valley by myself. Me, the van, the sunrises, the sunsets, the sounds of the coyotes at night, the dark sky, the, you know, being a part of something bigger and knowing myself in that place and being able to be present with myself in that place. And when I came back from Death Valley, I no longer had the symptoms of complex regional pain syndrome.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Which is uncurable disease, according to medicine, right? So, but she did say, you're right at the beginning of it. It's now or never. You either kick this or it goes on for the rest of your life. And I'm like, well, I'm kicking this. I'm not going to deal with this for the rest of my life unless I absolutely have to. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try this. I know how to do this. I know how to connect to something bigger than me. I know how to connect within myself and really just stop all this worry, stop being in my head, stop all the things that are creating this stress that may be contributing to this disease.
Wow. Well, why do you know how to do, nobody knows how to do that. It's like in a way it's a very evocative and like easy to evoke sympathy, like example that you've described of like a horrible, you know, disease.
Yeah.
But in a way, like this is kind of the mode that everyone is in. Like there's, what's his name? The psychologist, I think it's Gabor Mate or something like that, who talks about like the sort of like epigenetic trauma that we're all sort of mired in as a result of being like a generation that's been raised by a generation that's been raised by people who are shell-shocked in World War One. And, you know, we're living in like this addict culture that like everyone drinks or, you know, uses their phone or uses chocolate or whatever. Everybody has these addictions that they lean into in order to avoid confronting the like the fight or flight that we feel at all times, because our world is a sensory bombardment of anxiety and mistrust of strangers and just like bad vibes, you know?
Yeah.
But it sounded like you were just saying that you felt maybe like a confidence that you were resourced to tackle this. And I'm curious to hear more about that.
Wow. Okay. So that's a big one. So to tackle the getting out of being numb is, I think, what you're describing. Yes.
Yeah. Or
numbing yourself to the things that are causing you distress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, like, is that the right way to describe your like deliverance from this fight or flight disease? What's it called?
Complex regional pain syndrome. CPRS. CPRS. Yeah. So, my flight out of it, is, I think, so how I broke my arm, let's start with that. So how I broke my arm is I was in distress. I am an ICU nurse. I just worked pandemic. I had so many different things in my personal life happening, like grandma passing away or Danielle being hospitalized. Danielle's our sister. I know you know that, but for the audience.
Yeah. There are listeners. Yeah.
Yeah. And then my kids being in serious distress, they are all of that together put me in this state of distress in which I was trying to escape. And that escapism led me to doing all the normal things that people do to try to cope, right? And so I was at a company party and I had had three drinks trying to make myself feel better about being in a social situation, which I was stressed about. I was in heels. I was dancing. I was having fun. I hit the edge of the dance floor and fell and broke my arm. So here I was in this situation using alcohol and, you know, trying to deal with all this situation. And I had been drinking a lot more up until that point. Like before three drinks for me in a like hour and a half, 2 hour span of time would have flattened me. But at that point I had already, throughout my life, I haven't been a big drinker, but during that period of time, I was drinking more and more and more, noticing, hey, I'm trying to escape. I'm trying to escape all of this pain, right? And one of the things that I found to be interesting is I got a pain disorder trying to escape the pain. It's kind of ironic, right?
A little, yeah. More so than 1,000 forks when you need a spoon or whatever, for sure.
I love Alanis, by the way. She was great in concert.
Yes.
But yes, yeah. So to get out of this pain disorder, I needed to be able to reconnect. And in reconnecting, I needed to be able to not hold on to the pain, not avoid the pain, but actually feel the pain and then just let it go.
Wow.
And that, I think, is one of the hardest things to do in life is having all of this come at you, all of this pain come at you, and not fighting it, not trying to run from it, because that's what our nervous system wants to do.
Yeah.
But allowing it to be. And one of the things that that I read during that time is that, you know, if you drop a red food coloring into a glass of water, the water's going to turn pink, right? Mm. But if you drop a red food coloring into the ocean, it's going to do pretty much nothing to the ocean, right?
Yeah.
So if you become bigger, if you are no longer a glass of water, but you become the ocean, then that drop of pain isn't going to affect you the same way.
Yeah.
And that's what that was. Going out to the desert was that for me.
Wow.
I became part of the desert. And you know what? The desert is so full of life. It surprised the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Right? You think of desert, you think desolate, right? But it is so full of life and so much to explore and be a part of.
Yeah, it's literally called Death Valley. You wouldn't expect
right?
They might have called it Life Valley if they weren't going for a different impression, you know?
Yeah, they were looking for gold, but they found borax instead. So they're like, we're going to die in this valley looking for gold, but here we are, we're going to mine borax. That's borax. Kind of the story of Death Valley, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So I like this. We've kind of like, we've arrived at Death Valley now. And so you took your van there, right?
Yes. And
you were solo. So, I mean, like already it feels like almost a monastic activity or something, like a real retreat from everything that could possibly get in the way of you feeling your pain, right? Yes. Like, I can't imagine there's like internet out there or anything, right?
Not where the campsite was. No internet, no cell phone service, nothing. Nothing. I mean, I have the ability for satellite connection in case of emergency, but no distractions. I wasn't there to fool around on my phone or watch TV, or I was there to experience what it was like to be there in that moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. It's how idyllic does that sound?
Right.
Also though, like maybe harrowing in a way that, you know, everybody kind of wants to get away from their phone and whatever. Like sometimes I'll like leave my phone at the house and go to Target, you know, to buy paper towels or whatever. And just being away from my phone for that 30 minutes feels like a palpable sense of liberation.
Yeah. But at first it can feel so anxiety provoking. Like I need my phone. Like I don't even have cell phone service. What happens if I blow a tire in the van? You know, what happens? You know, nobody knows where I truly am at this very moment. Nobody on earth except for me knows exactly where I am, because I can't contact anybody because I have no cell phone service.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I do have the emergency, you know, ability to do that. But, and again, I'm in a national park. Death Valley is a national park. There's rangers, there's all that. But there is some anxiety, and hiking around solo out and not seeing anybody for, you know, an hour while you're out there hiking around can be fear producing, and it can be very liberating. It's hard to describe. There's not like I'm the most me when I'm there. And that in and of itself is also scary, because then you have to face you have to face yourself. You have to face all the things you've been running away from, because there's no distractions.
Yeah. And the loneliness that you're describing, or the isolation, which like kind of harkens back to the isolation at the beginning of your story about like why you got the van in the first place. There's sort of a symmetry there or something. But yeah. The isolation, I think the projections that other people put on us are like also a big part of what prevents us from experiencing our authentic selves, right? Like other people's impressions of you or the way that they misunderstand the words that you're saying or whatever are, you know, just another layer of data that you're receiving about yourself that isn't necessarily coming from the like deepest wellspring of your being that is like authentic. So it's all distraction. So like who's out there, you know? what did you do? What's your day-to-day like?
So my day-to-day, I woke up. I prefer my body from birth. If you talk to mom, she'll tell you this. From birth, I'm a morning person. So I wake up and watch the sunrise. And watching the sun rise over the mountains and into the valley is a truly phenomenal experience, you know, and sitting there on a hill watching the sunrise and being present for that and all the changes that happen when a sunrise happens. You know, it starts out dark and you go through pastel colors and then bright colors because the sun really is starting to come out. That experience lets me know that I'm the same miracle that sunset is.
Mm.
Just, I am part of all of that.
Yeah. So you were taking mushrooms too?
No, I didn't. I actually didn't take anything. I didn't even drink alcohol. I didn't. The things I put in my body were food and water and vitamins.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my thyroid medication. About as heavy as it got.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. I thought about it afterwards. I'm like, this would have been a good place for that. But no.
Maybe a slightly, like you need a trip sitter or something if you're going to do mushrooms in the national park. But that oneness, I mean, that's, we talk about that on this podcast, like all the time, even though I think very few people who are on the podcast have experiential knowledge of it, but like the sense that, I mean, these boundaries that we draw around ourselves that are like, I'm this and you're that, and we're separate. And, you know, the desk that I'm touching is a completely different thing from the hands that are touching it. But like, I don't know, it kind of seems like if you zoom out enough, you could imagine the same conversation going on between, you know, one of my skin cells and another one of my skin cells. Like, oh, we have these boundaries, we have these walls, we're separate things. But like, ultimately, you zoom out and it's all one thing. Is that, am I grokking you correctly?
Yes. Yeah. So we are separate and we are not, and in my opinion. And one of the experiences that I had right before I went to the desert, I think about often. So at work, I had this crazy experience in which I take care of very sick people, sometimes the sickest people on the West Coast of the United States. Mm. And so I was, you have to, I guess, psychically prepare yourself for that. Otherwise, I do at least. I have to psychically prepare myself for that. And then I need to set my intention. And so I try to do that at every shift before I take care of a patient. And I try to do that while trying to feel the presence of my patient, because a lot of my patients are not conscious. They are in ICU sedation. They are potentially, but probably not aware of my existence even at that point.
Yeah.
But I feel like there is some energetic connection between all of us. And so I tried to set that intention with my patient. And so I was taking care of this one patient who was very, very sick, probably not going to make it. And so very close to death. And I typically tend to take care of the sickest patients just based on my experience. And so at the time, I grabbed this patient's hand and tried to feel them, you know, like the energetics of that person, right? And so what I felt is a sense that that patient wasn't doing so well spiritually or energetically, or I don't know how to describe it. But what I did was I visualized taking this person, throwing them a rope because they're down at the bottom of a huge cliff at the bottom of the ravine. I'm going to throw them a rope and I'm going to try to pull them back up. And that was what my visualization was for that shift for that patient. Like, you're down at the bottom, dude, and I'm going to help you get back up. That's my job for today. My next 12 hours, that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to use science and I'm going to use everything I have to try to do that. So, a couple weeks later, that patient ended up surviving, and I came into that patient's room, and he had a different nurse, and I was helping that nurse do something, and I said, "Hey, you probably don't remember me because you were out at the time that I was taking care of you, but my name is Christine. I'm here to help your nurse with this task, and it's good to meet you, and it's so good to see you sitting up in the chair." And he said, "I know your voice." And I said, "You do? Do you remember?" And he's like, "Yeah, you talked to me and told me what was going on as you were, you know, doing what you were doing," which I do. Like, it doesn't matter if you can't hear me or not. I don't know if you can. If you're completely sedated, I'm still going to tell you, "Hey, I'm going to lift your arm," or, you know, "I'm going to wipe down your face now," or whatever I'm going to do. "You're going to get this medication." And so he said, "You know, I had the craziest dream, and I think it was you, that I was in this really dark place and you were pulling me towards the light." And I was like, "Get out of here." And I didn't tell him my visualization. I didn't say anything. And I said, "That's, you know, tell me more. That's a really crazy dream." And he said, "Yeah, I knew that there was somebody on the other side, and your voice was the voice that I heard, and you were pulling me towards this light, and I was in this really dark place." And so, you know, I said, "Wow, that's very powerful. And, you know, I'm so glad you're doing so much better that you came towards the light. And that was, you know, that's amazing." But his description of it and what he had said to me, I think we're connected. And I think that those two things are connected. And so, you know, we're part of something, in my opinion, and I might be totally wrong. In my opinion, we are part of all of it. I am the universe experiencing itself through Christine.
Yeah.
I'm able to watch the sunrise, which is part of the universe, but I'm also part of the universe. So I'm the universe experiencing itself as Christine.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. You know, what a story. I like, I'm kind of grateful the camera's off, 'cause I'm like welling up and stuff over here, and I'm still like too, you know, toxically masculine to let my sister see me cry or anything, but like that's a really beautiful story. And I don't know, maybe this is something I didn't quite know about you, this psychic ability that you've got. And that's a really, you know, that expression, I think it's an Alan Watts quote, but I'm not sure if that's exactly who came up with it, this idea that we're the universe experiencing itself.
Yeah. It's from somewhere. I read it somewhere. It's not mine, but
yeah. I'm not trying to accuse you of plagiarism or anything. Yeah. I'm remembering I read one of his books recently too. And the idea that we are, I mean, like, it's, I guess we're sort of back on that conversation of like, how much do you rely on science and how much do you rely on like the intuitive and the metaphysical and the inexplicable and the mysterious? And I really like that you, took care, I think, in that story to point out that you were throwing the rope, not just with your, you know, Reiki energy or whatever, but also with like medications and science and every tool at your disposal.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting there are a lot of different ways that we could frame the world. And I think a lot of people would say like, oh no, my way is the right way. You know, this especially, some of the like scientific materialist type folks, you know, like the Richard Dawkinses of the world or Steven Pinkers or whatever, might say like, you know, oh, you're foolish for believing that there's, or Daniel Dennis wrote a book about consciousness not even being a real phenomenon and we're just tricking ourselves into thinking we're conscious. Like these people, they believe only matter exists and there's nothing apart from that. And anything else is silly because it's not supported by scientific evidence. But like, that's just one framing of the world. And if your objective is to heal a person or to heal yourself, maybe it's not the right framing. Like the metaphor that Alan Watts used in this book was like, you've got a rabbit or a group of rabbits, and you can say like, do I want to classify them by, you know, the color of their fur or what kind of meat they produce or how cuddly they are or whatever. Like all of those are different, like valid ways to say like, this is group A of rabbits and this is group B or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it kind of depends on what you want to do with them in order to like really make a good decision about which classification criteria you're going to lean on. And like, maybe, you know, maybe a world that, I don't know, this like this, a worldview that makes space for metaphysics and for us all to be connected and for it all to be meaningful and purposive is a little more conducive to saving lives and healing yourself and, you know, all of that.
Yeah, I think so. There's a nursing diagnosis that in school, we all make fun of it because it's too metaphysical. It's too out there. It's too esoteric. It's like, it is disturbed energy field. However, I have experienced this in my work. I've experienced it in my life. There is a connection that we all have, I believe, but there's also the connection that I can only describe as energy or a phenomenon that I can only describe as energy, in which it affects people's ability to heal themselves. It affects my ability to help heal other people. It affects everything. And there are people, I could walk into a room and feel this person has lost the will to live. Without them saying anything, without them doing anything, they could be completely on a ventilator, hooked up to all the things, and completely sedated. And I can feel this person has lost the will to live. But you can also feel the opposite, that this person is fighting and they are fighting hard.
Yeah. I believe you.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I 100%, that sounds plausible. So, I mean, like, Yeah. So, okay. Let's go back to Death Valley. So the sunrise has occurred. You were taking me through your day and I didn't let you get very far. But like, are you eating or are you meditating? Like, how are you spending time?
I'm eating. When I feel hungry, I eat. And then I also, a lot of the time I spent just exploring the park. Like, there's these dunes. That's where they filmed Star Wars. You know, those dunes are Tatooine. I'm going to go see Tatooine, you know? Or I did have an experience which my life was saved by two ravens. Did I tell you this already?
I think so.
Okay, so my life was saved by two ravens. So I was following in Death Valley. If you download the National Park Service app, they take you on a tour of all the Star Wars film locations, and I love Star Wars. So. something about rebelling against an evil empire just definitely appeals to me. So I was following these Star Wars locations, and there's one location in which R2 was going through, or maybe I forget. Anyway, it's one of the locations, and there is a ravine that you can walk through that. Is totally beautiful. And I decided to do it very early in the morning before anybody else was out there. There was literally nobody in the parking lot and nobody around. And so as I'm walking, these two ravens touch down and they are making a ton of noise, like ravens tend to do. And
nevermore.
Yeah, right. Doing the raven thing. And so I didn't pay them much attention, and I kept walking, and they kind of followed me. They were up on the hillside from me, and they kept just going nuts, and I was starting to feel creeped out, and I was like, this is too creepy. I'm not going to do this full hike. I'm going to turn around. So I turn around, and I think to myself, okay, I'm not going to let fear decide what I'm doing. This is lame. I turn around, I take a picture of the ravens, and I take a picture of the ravine, and I look at my picture, and I'm like, what is that in the lower left-hand corner? And in the lower left-hand corner, I blow it up on my phone. It is a mountain lion.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And I'm like, holy crap. And so I look at my phone. I look at the where I've taken the picture. I look at the hillside, and I can barely see it. But there it is. And these ravens are just going nuts, right? And so I quickly, without running, make my way back to my car, talking to myself like, thank you, ravens. Okay, Miss Mountain Lion, please do not eat me. You know, the whole time I'm talking to myself, you know, trying to like calm myself down. My heart is racing. I get back to the van, and I look at the picture again, and I'm like, I just got saved by two ravens, probably thinking I was going to get killed and I was their next meal. I don't know. But this is this is over, and I don't want to go back there. I am done with this location. I have seen it. I have taken pictures. We're good.
So, yeah.
But that was probably the scariest thing that happened in Death Valley, and I survived it, and those ravens helped. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, humans will find like a grizzly bear or something that's got a peanut bar jar stuck on its head. You know, like you see these videos on TikTok all the time, and the humans will like, you know, very carefully sneak up on the bear or whatever and crack the jar off. The internet is full of videos of humans like saving mooses and seals and all sorts of things. And like a lot of these animals could very easily kill us.
Yeah.
But like the idea that only humans would want to like, you know, preserve life in that way. I don't know. I don't I don't think the Ravens were cawing because they were excited that they were going to get seconds on,
you know, from the mountain. I think,
I think that it makes sense to me that other animals would take a little pleasure in, like, you know, occasionally sticking up for the underdog or whatever, you know. I think that it's a thing that's in us, and so it must be a thing that's in these creatures that we share 99% of our DNA with, or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah. It reminds me of the whale that took the diver under its fin because there were sharks around. It saw danger and cared for the human that was in the water with it. You know, animals. I mean, there's so many examples of animals helping out humans and protecting humans or other animals, you know. Mm-hmm. I think I'd like to think that those ravens were like, hey, yo, just so you know, there's a large cat over there. So that's what I would like to think. But I mean, I'm not a raven. I don't know. And I'm not those ravens, but they did end up helping me out, whether intentional or not intentional. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Got back to my van, and then there's a couple that had just pulled into the parking lot, got out of their car, and I'm like, hey, just so you know, let me just show you this picture on my phone. There's a mountain lion over there. They're like, oh, thanks. You know,
but. Yeah. It ripples.
Yeah. Hopefully. I hope to spread good ripples. Although I don't always spread good ripples, I hope to.
Well, I'm going to challenge you on that all of the ripples have to be good because they're all part of the universe. And the universe can... You know what I mean? I'll get too woo for you. I'll one up you on the woo-ness. But the universe is all things. And if it is all things, then it can only be the way that it is. And if it can only be the way that it is, you could say, you know, it's empty or it just is what it is or it's neutral or whatever. But why not just say it's good? You know, like, what else could it be? You know? Maybe you can't save this life or there's pain that you caused someone. But really, like, without getting outside of the universe and looking at it and, like, you know, being the ravenologist or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's a way to, you know, to really, it's certainly not with, like, rational analytic ability to separate, you know. A taxonomy of these are all the good actions and these are all the bad actions. And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. It's all things. I like that.
It's all things.
And trying to avoid the bad things can lead to issues. Going back
Wonderful.
To, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Not experiencing or avoiding or I don't know. Fighting the pain can cause more pain. It makes it last longer. If you let it just flow through you, then it is able to go through you and be gone. You know?
But yeah, thank you for bailing me out there. Thank you for tying it back in. You're exactly right. That is the attitude that, like, that creates addiction or that creates, you know, like, revenge or the sort of, like, the escalating of conflict and things like that. It's an attitude of dividing the world into good and evil and saying, like, my pain is evil, so I'm going to suppress it and not feel it or run away from it or whatever. it's awful to say, I think, and frequently uncalled for, but maybe it's just something that I'm trying to approach with my own life. This idea that like the suffering is the grace, and there is something, I don't know. I think, a way that the thing that makes you feel the most apart from source or the divine or the all or the universe or whatever you want to call it is the thing that like creates a connection, you know, that like reminds you of the existence of a connection between you and everything. I don't know.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. It was my pain that drove me to connect.
Yeah.
And it was bawling my eyes out in the middle of the desert about all the things that I wasn't allowing myself to feel that let me let that go.
You know, I had a feeling there must have been a moment like that on the trip.
Several, in fact. Yeah.
But it's the mountain lion that's the scariest. Right?
Yeah, the mountain lion's still the scariest. But it's the anticipation of feeling that pain that is scary. The actual feeling the pain of all that shitty, crappy, awful, painful stuff, that experience is not as bad as the anticipation, I feel like.
Yeah. Well, who is it? I forget. Someone said our worst fears lie in anticipation.
Yeah.
And so, and that is, it sounds like that's what you're crediting with the healing is the like, you know, bawl your eyes out kind of moment.
Yeah, well, all of it, the bawl your eyes out moment, the sunrise moment, the raven / mountain lion moments, the standing on top of the mountain ridge and looking over the valley, the all of that, I needed all of it. Mm. I needed the sad, the angry, the enraged, the moments of bliss, I needed all of it. I needed the stars and, you know, the tears and the mountain lion. I needed all of it.
Wow. That's really beautiful.
My physical therapist, when I got back, because I had a physical therapy for my arm because I had nerve damage in my arm. My physical therapist, he said, well, what do you credit with what happened? Because, you know, you in the desert, tell me what you did. He really wanted to know because he sees people suffering, really, really suffering from nerve damage and pain syndromes and whatnot. And he said, I said, well, the thing that I think helped me the most was to let go of the fear of pain and to just be with it. And just being with it, whatever it is, because we go through so, so much and try to avoid or fight it or not experience it. I just think that in some ways that's a really, really common human mistake to make. Not that mistake isn't the right word. It's a common human experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So practically speaking, probably like 7 or 8 billion people who just went through a global pandemic who have all sorts of trauma. And maybe a lot of them are less acute than a literal ICU nurse who dealt with you know, all those horrors.
Yeah.
But in a way, a lot of us are probably traumatized and feeling pain. And
yeah,
I mean, just growing up in modern society, I have no doubt that there's a buffet of pain available to everyone. So do you have a prescription, doctor, Dr. Wolfer?
No, I only have my own experiences, what has worked for me. And yeah, disease on the scale that we experienced it was so traumatic. And then the treatment was traumatic. The social isolation, that was traumatic, losing businesses. I mean, to me, COVID is not just a disease that killed people in my ICU. It's also so much more than that. And there was so much that people experienced. And I think connection is the way out of that.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Let's connect.
Yeah.
Thanks for connecting with me and with, you know, the Creek Masons by sharing your story. That was, what a joy.
Yeah. I mean, thank you.
That was really wonderful. Thanks for becoming a node.
Woo. Yay. Node.
All right.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff, for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.